I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. When Congress comes back today from its recess, at the top of its list is a decision about a possible military response to Syria. After the Syrian government's reported use of chemical weapons on civilians, President Obama said he wishes to intervene with limited strikes to let President Assad know he's crossed a so-called red line. And while the Senate Foreign Relations Committee narrowly voted to support such an action, there are still grave doubts, both from Congress at large and the American public. A resolution for congressional support has a rocky path going forward, with the full Senate yet to vote and the highly skeptical House thereafter. Meanwhile, in the Granite State, an anti-war protest took place at the State House over the weekend, and many people here and across the country, still unsure about how they feel or where they stand, will be tuning into the president's primetime address on Syria tomorrow night, looking for answers. Today in The Exchange, with so much happening in Syria, we're taking some time to catch up on this story, and we want to hear from you. Your thoughts about what action the U.S. should take in Syria, if any, and what do you want to hear from the president on Tuesday night that may help inform your opinion? Can the U.S. afford another military intervention, or are the humanitarian violations there so great that we must? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We begin with one member of New Hampshire's delegation who will be voting on this issue soon. Democratic Congresswoman Ann McLean Custer of the 2nd District is with us. And Representative Custer, thank you very much for giving us your time.
Absolutely, Laura, and thank you for doing the show. I think it's important and a high level of engagement.
Well, absolutely.
New Hampshire voters.
And so how do you feel about it, Congresswoman Custer, the possibility of a limited U.S. strike against Syria? What are your thoughts?
Well, as of now, Laura, and I've said throughout the past week, I have very grave concerns about the proposed use of U.S. military and intervention and force in Syria. What I've been doing is listening to my constituents. Frankly, it's been very impressive, the level of engagement. We had what's called a telephone town hall last Wednesday evening with 5,000 people on the phone call.
Wow.
2,000 people stayed on the phone call for almost a half an hour. And the comments were fascinating. They were so thoughtful. The analysis was so thoughtful. And frankly, we heard every angle on this issue. We heard people who feel that this humanitarian crisis, as you say, crossing this red line about the use of chemical weapons is so significant in the world that we need to take action. And then we heard from many people, a number of people, that felt very strongly either they don't want the United States to be drawn into the conflict. Many, frankly, talked about the cost in terms of lives and dollars that the United States has borne over the Iraq and Afghanistan invasion. Heard from a number of veterans and veterans' families, which I listened to very carefully. And so they were very thoughtful. Then I had the opportunity to go to Washington for the classified briefing. And was able to hear from the CIA, from the National Security Council, from the State Department, from the Department of Defense, and from the military themselves in a classified setting what the objectives are and what the intentions are. And at this point, my concerns as I go back to Washington today are very focused on the objective of the military intervention and the unintended consequences both to the intervention and if the United States does not act.
So you said you have grave concerns, Congresswoman. So those grave concerns are uncertainty about the objective and concern about unintended consequences. Is that right?
Right, yes. there is a conundrum that's buried in this. Frankly, there are multiple conundrums buried in this, but one is very specific as to the intention and objective of the military intervention. What has been confirmed to me and was one of my very original questions, we are not able, nor do we have any intention of eliminating the chemical weapons themselves because of the risk of a cloud that would develop that would be harmful to not only the Syrian people, but the 2 million refugees that have fled Syria and the neighboring countries, Israel, Jordan, Turkey. And as a result of that, it means that the way they're spelling out the limited intervention is to target the transport, meaning the airplanes, the helicopters, the missiles. And by the way, I'm being very careful. None of this is from the classified briefing. There are articles in the Washington Post that I recommend to people about the possible targets. The president and all of the briefers have been very, very careful not to identify what the targets will be, and frankly, that decision wouldn't be made until a last, minute decision by the president. But my concern is very specific. We are concerned that these possible chemical weapons will fall into the hands of elements of the rebel forces and, frankly, terrorists around the world. And so when you hear the term that this is in the United States' strategic interest, it's not because we think the Syrians are going to launch these weapons at us. They don't have that capacity. But it's because we are concerned that either they would launch the weapons at allies of ours in the region, or that the weapons would fall into the hands of terrorists around the globe.
So this is a matter of national security, in your opinion, Representative Custer?
I have not reached that conclusion. I'm saying that that's the case that's being made. I'm trying to explain the case of why they say it's in our national security. But my concern is very specific. If we cannot eliminate these weapons, then by creating a more chaotic situation in a war-torn nation, we risk that we cannot contain these weapons, and we may inadvertently be leaving the weapons in the hands of the very people that we don't want them to get. So that's why I say there's many levels of difficulty. But the one for me, just to pull back for a bit, I have not been convinced that the strike is going to fulfill the president's stated objection, deter and degrade the use of chemical weapons. Now, I have many, many, many other concerns. We're a war-weary nation. There are multiple levels of this, but I wanted to try to be very specific for your listeners.
Yeah, and I appreciate you giving us your time, Representative Custer. If I could ask you one last question, I know your time is limited this morning. What do you want to hear from President Obama tomorrow night when he makes this big speech? He'll be talking to the American public, but to you also. He wants your vote.
Well, I think part of the challenge of this entire past couple of weeks for both members of Congress and the American people is that the people who are advising the president are way down the road in this conversation. They've spent the last 2 years of the Syrian engagement in diplomacy, in trying to thwart the use of these chemical weapons. And so I think for those people that are steeped in it, they, as soon as this happened, as soon as we got word of this, they said, oh, this is the news we've been waiting for, but this is the piece that will make this clear to the American people and to Congress that we need to act. And so far, been this focus on the proof that this happened, and then there's been this sort of leap of faith or conjecture to, therefore, this is how we need to react. And we haven't taken the time to lay out to the American people or members of Congress why this is the reaction as compared to other steps that could be taken that would not draw the United States into, frankly, the word I've used, conflagration in the Middle East. That's my big concern.
So it sounds like you feel like the Obama administration is moving too quickly for the American people.
Well, I think they've been moving at what they feel is a deliberative pace, but it hasn't been in the news, that the American people haven't been a part of that conversation. And then this episode triggered everyone's attention to it, and we need to take the time to, you know, bring people along, explore all the alternatives. Can we take him to the International Criminal Court? Why can't we work through the United Nations? One constituent had a very interesting idea. He said, during Korea, we had this same problem where there was a threatened veto at the Security Council, and we went to the General Assembly. Can we bring NATO in on the conversations? Can we bring the rest of the countries that stood with the United States in the past to bear on this? So I think a major concern that I've heard and that feeling that I have is about this notion of the U.S. sort of going alone, going it alone. But I will say that I think everyone needs to take into consideration, and I am trying to, that understanding the consequences of inaction as well as understanding potential unintended consequences of action.
Well, Congresswoman Custer, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Lauren. Thanks for doing the show, and I wish you all well in sorting it out. And I'll be standing by listening to hear the discussion. So
okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Yep, take care. Bye-bye.
And I want to let our listeners know that we reached out to the entire New Hampshire delegation, Senator Shaheen and Ayotte, as well as Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter. Congresswoman Custer was the only one who responded to our request for an interview. A lot more on Syria and reaction here in the Granite State coming up.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to find out the latest state, national, and international news as it breaks. Also, listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of, and find related stories about something that interests you. There's always something more at NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Farnham Hill Ciders, orchard made from real cider apples at Poverty Lane Orchards, perfect for seasonal celebrations and featured in New Hampshire wine and liquor outlet stores. And from Centurion Insurance Group of Hanover, New Hampshire, offering personal, commercial, and wholesale brokerage insurance services to clients nationwide at CenturionUSA.com. New Hampshire weather is sunny today, highs upper 60s to lower 70s, partly cloudy tonight, not as cool, lows upper 40s to mid 50s, mostly cloudy tomorrow, chance of afternoon thunderstorms, warmer, highs from mid 70s to lower 80s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, seeking solutions on Syria, with President Obama getting ready to make a major speech on this topic tomorrow night, members of Congress preparing to vote on whether the U.S. should engage in a limited military strike on Syria in response to its reported use of chemical weapons against civilians. We're asking what you think. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. In our first segment, we heard from Anne McLean Custer, Democratic Congresswoman from New Hampshire's 2nd District. We have three guests for the hour. Bill Martell is here in studio, Associate Professor of International Security at Tufts University's Fletcher School. His most recent book is called Victory in War. And Bill, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Same here, Laura. Thank you.
Also joining us from UNH, Jeannie Sowers, Associate Professor of Political Science there. She's author of Environmental Politics in Egypt and co-editor of Journey to Tahrir. And Jeannie Sowers, welcome back, and thank you also for your time. And Jeannie Sowers will be with us in just a moment. Sarwar Kashmiri is also here, adjunct professor at Norwich University, fellow at the Foreign Policy Association. He's author of NATO 2.0 and America and Europe After 9/11. And Sarwar Kashmiri, welcome to you too, and thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure, Laura.
And Jeannie, I did want to start with you. You are sort of our resident Middle East expert. You spent a lot of time in the region. Before we dive back into this very difficult question of what the U.S. should do, just back up real quick for us, Jeannie, if we could. How did this whole civil war in Syria get started? Why has it gone on for so long?
Well, I think the reasons it got started were the same reasons that had uprisings in Tunisia and Egypt and Bahrain and Libya. There's a lot of frustration with a regime that the Assad regime, the one that's still, of course, there, with its policies on economics, with its repression, with its inability to adapt. And so there was kind of a long-term simmering discontent. And then once the uprising started in 2011 in these other countries, sort of large numbers of Syrians started thinking, what can we do also? And the trigger was just a small protest. It was actually just some graffiti on a school in a very small town, Daraa, in the south of Syria on the Jordanian border. And it was just school children, all under the age of 11, a very small number of them, who scrawled, you know, this slogan of the uprisings, this common slogan, the people want to follow the regime. And they were detained, and their bodies, their tortured bodies, were returned to their families. And the way the regime started in its response is the way it went on. So its response to this popular uprising was a whole set of really horrible red lines that it crossed.
So a brutal response at every turn.
A brutal response at every turn, and also labeling those who rose up against the regime as terrorists and infiltrators and foreigners.
So when we look at these conflicts, and a lot of these have taken the shape of popular uprisings, civil wars, who are the sides here, Jeannie? I mean, in Syria, is it clear who the bad guys are and the good guys are?
Well, I think it's clear that the regime has for a long time been a bad guy, so we could just start with that. But it's not just a civil war. So what makes, I think, Representative Custer's term of conundrums is excellent. There's so many in Syria. It's a regional conflict. So I think the regime would have long ago either had to negotiate or even capitulate if Russia had not been backing the regime so strongly, and Iran also, through money, through weapons, and through sending in the case of Iran, its sort of proxies in Lebanon, Hezbollah. So we have a civil war, but we also have a regional conflict already, which the U.S. is already involved in by supplying small arms and also sort of providing training and intelligence and humanitarian assistance.
From what I've heard, Jeannie, and then I want to bring our other guests in as well, but from what I've heard, you know, to say the opposition, to say the rebels, there's a lot of unsavory characters in rebel ranks. I mean, it isn't all just, you know, sort of good guys like Thomas Jefferson who want to start democracy in Syria.
Absolutely. I think the one of the costs of sort of international inaction in this conflict has been the radicalization and the fragmentation of these, what starts as this mass uprising and has now fragmented into all sorts of armed groups with all different agendas, many of which are receiving also funding from the outside. So Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United States, Turkey, and the other interesting players, the Kurdish militias. So actually the sort of northeast corner of the country is actually under Kurdish control at the moment. So there's lots of different players, lots of different agendas, but you see the longer the conflict goes on, the more radicalization we would see.
Well, and I want to bring Bill Martell and Sara Kashmir into this too. And Bill, to you, so here's the question at hand. As you well know, should the U.S. take some kind of military action against Syria? What kind of military action is the Obama administration talking about? I mean, I hear limited strike, I hear pinprick, I hear about red lines. What are we talking about here?
Well, what the debate's been going on in Washington for the last couple of weeks, and really the issue is whether to use military force. The administration has really steered, I think, the discussion toward that we should. And it tends to and there's lots of planning going on. Congresswoman Custer discussed and described that a little bit with some of the classified briefings she's been receiving. What one senses from the public reporting is that we're talking probably about cruise missile strikes. What their targets are is debatable. One suspects it's probably military installations, communication facilities, et cetera. And then part A of the debate, part B of the debate is the whole question of what should we do here? Should we use force or not? And to what extent should this be central to the American strategy? And I think the force that has driven us mostly to where we are is a combination of both, if you will, calculating opposition to the use of chemical weapons and a moral outrage. One clearly sensed with the president and the secretary of state that they were outraged by the use of those chemical weapons. As Jeannie mentioned and as the congressman mentioned particularly, the concern with all the unsavory groups that are in Syria right now, particularly al-Qaeda, particularly extremists, our fear that we've been worried, this is a fear that goes back 9/11 and before, is that these folks get their hands on these kinds of weapons. The secondary issue is the question of our credibility. And I'm gravitating toward the view, as important as chemical weapons are, as important as the as it is to hem in or contain or to deal with Russian and Syrian influence, which has been overwhelming in support of Syria, that it ultimately boils down to the question of the credibility of the United States. For the United States, through its president, to say that there's a no-kidding red line here and not to act on that, I think has consequences the likes of which we have never seen in American foreign policy since the end of the Second World War.
So you're saying we should do this?
I'm saying that once the president said, quote, that the to move or to use chemical weapons will cross a red line for us, I think our options went practically to zero in terms of looking the other way.
Okay, one last quick question for you, Bill. So we keep saying against the Syria, you know, a strike to punish the Syrian government for its reported use or alleged use of chemical weapons. As you know, President Assad went on Charlie Rose over the weekend and said, look, it wasn't me. I didn't use these things. Do we know for a fact that it was the government that used these weapons?
When confronted with the do we know for a fact, always be cautionary. If I have to assume, and I think that with the American people, policymakers, members of Congress, Senate, the world, if the president, the secretary of state, and other high-ranking officials come out and declare that the evidence is overwhelming that Assad was behind this, I don't know how we, among all those communities, how we basically evince any kind of uncertainty about this.
Okay, but in Iraq, with President Bush, he said they were there and they were a threat, and Colin Powell went on television and said this is a threat, and then the chemical weapons turned out not to be there. So,
on then the other hand, and we really don't want to rehearse the 2003 debate. On the other hand, but the Iraqis did use chemical weapons against their own people in the 90s. So I'm very much willing to be persuaded that for the level of certitude that's being described by senior policy people in the U.S. President, Secretary of State, I think it's pretty credible. The other footnote to that quickly is that when the Russians came out initially and on several occasions and said this is obviously the rebels that are using this kind of thing, I think that has zero credibility. The EU, European Union, yesterday came out and said that has no credibility. So I think the evidence is that Assad and his folks were behind this.
Okay, Sawar Kashmir, I haven't forgotten about you. How do you feel when you hear President Obama say these types of actions, meaning chemical weapons, the world cannot allow it? It's too much. It crosses a line. If we don't take a stand, others will say, hey, we can use these too. How do you feel about that, Sawar?
I feel that we have somehow made this chemical weapons treaty by our behavior into an American treaty. This is not an American treaty. It's an international treaty. And we have done very little to formalize its introduction into the UN, into NATO. And I am very opposed to the vote to attack Syria, and I hope that the Congress votes against it. And I'll just give you a couple of reasons why.
Sure.
One, I think that the actions we, the U.S., are about to take is hypocritical and inconsistent. Go back 3 weeks. The Egyptian military killed over 1,000 of their own people, men, women, children. They shot them with snipers. So Mr. Assad killed 1,000 men, women, and children. So is the message the U.S. is trying to send is that, hey, it's okay to kill your own civilians and your men, women, and children. Just don't do it with chemical weapons. Is that the message we're trying to send? The second issue about credibility that was made, I was on a nuclear-powered carrier not too long ago, very much like the one that's standing outside Syria right now. You watch those planes take off. Any one of these carriers, Laura, has more firepower than most countries in the world. We have 11 of those. There is no one in the world that can doubt America's credibility. If Congress votes no, it will not take away from the president the power to act unilaterally if American safety is in question. So I do not believe that the credibility of the United States is being attached in this. Finally, Professor Sars mentioned if Russia and Iran had not, supported Syria, this would have ended a long time ago. And let me, with all respect, suggest that if the West had not supported the rebels, this would not have become a civil war and this would have ended a long time ago. So that's where I come out. I think for all of these reasons, Congress needs to send a message to the president that this whole policy was not thought out. We've been involved in Middle Eastern civil wars now for 12 years. Thousands of Americans have been dead. Trillions of dollars have been spent. And we've achieved literally nothing. They have a lot to work out. Let them get out with it. Not our national interest. Stay away.
All right. Well, let's gauge our listeners' thoughts as well. I've got a stack of emails and full phone lines, and I know you all three have a lot more to say. The number for you to join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. That was Sarwar Kashmiri, adjunct professor at Norwich University, fellow at the Foreign Policy Association. With me in studio, Bill Martell, associate professor of international security at Tufts University. Jeannie Sowers is also with us, associate professor of political science and UNH and a Middle East scholar. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email, keep them short, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And all of you, let's go to the phones first. Gregory's waiting in Keene. Hi, Gregory. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Thank you, Laura. I'd like to ask your panel if they believe what I heard earlier on the radio, that the Syrian conflict is a proxy war fought out by Iran and Saudi Arabia, and if in fact they believe that to be true, and if that is the case, what does that say for American foreign policy?
Gregory, great
right
question.
Now?
Yeah, Jeannie Sowers, I'll turn to you. Go ahead.
I think it is has people funding both sides, but it is not simply a proxy war. That is way too simplistic. And I think that the earlier point that the West intervened, the West has not provided any level, commensurate level of support to what the regime, the government has received from Russia and from Iran. It is not commensurate. And in fact, it's been deliberately limited quite thoughtfully by the kinds of concerns that Representative Custer expressed at the very beginning, which is that the U.S. government has been very wary about simply throwing arms at different groups. So they are slowly and painstakingly trying to vet them. But meanwhile, while they're doing this, the forces on the ground are morphing very quickly into whole bunches of different groups. So yes, there are regional actors involved, but no, it is not simply a proxy war.
Gregory, thanks for the call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And here's a comment that just came in from Facebook. This person says, if our president goes into Syria without the approval of the Senate, he will be doing what he so passionately opposed when Bush invaded Iraq. Bill Martell, to you first. This your response to this listener's question. And then also, I wonder more broadly, how the ghost of Iraq is haunting this discussion.
It is given the debates in the United States over the last handful of years, given the president's position on congressional approval and authorization. It seemed to me inconceivable at the time that he not get congressional approval. I think that the tactical mistake, the strategic conclusion or decision to go to the Congress was the right one. The tactical error was to do so late in the process. You can't really beat the drums of war for a week, then grind everything to a halt, then bring in the Congress. Even if it produces a good outcome, it looks like we're dithering a little bit. So I don't see how we can, at this point, proceed. How the president could not have gone to Congress. The $64,000 question is, what if the Congress says no? I think my gut tells me the Senate will say yes. My gut as well, and I could be totally wrong, and now I have thousands of people on the record that can see where I am on the record. I think the House will say yes as well, because I think the failure to say yes will deeply damage this president and the credibility of the country. So I think But if they don't approve it, and then his decision is really tough. He either undermines the credibility of the country and his own credibility, or runs against what the Congress has directed. That is what the Brits call a sticky wicket. It's a very difficult issue. I'm hoping and suspecting that he's probably made that decision. You don't open that can of worms in whether to use military force unless you've made that decision.
Well, thanks for that Facebook comment. And let's go back to our callers. And John's waiting in Stratford. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. There are consequences, as history has shown, for both inaction and action, as we saw in the origins of World War II and World War I. Is this a Munich moment where appeasement led to led to a much larger war, or is it a Sarajevo moment where, with the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, unintended consequences developed and led to World War I?
Yeah. What do you think, John?
I think I'm really pleased that President Obama went to Congress with this, because it's a huge question, and it's something that all our elected representatives are going to have to take very seriously and deal with, because there is no clear answer.
Yeah, John, thanks a lot.
In my opinion.
Yeah, well.
What do your guests think?
Yeah, thank you very much for calling in. And Sarwar, I'll turn to you first. Boy, he's got some great historical allusions there.
I can tell John is a reader of history. Thank you for that question, John. I myself don't think it's either a Munich or a Sarajevo moment. I think it's a moment that displays the amateurishness with which the United States has handled Middle Eastern foreign policy. You know, all of these countries that are now in turmoil were created artificially after the First World War. And what we are seeing now is a region-wide civil war that the Arabs, the Middle Eastern countries, need to sort out by themselves. The action that is being displayed by the president and the Congress has to vote on now are the remnants of a colonial policy that will not remain for long. You know, let me remind John that Saudi Arabia has bought hundreds of billions of dollars worth of arms from the United States. Turkey has the largest army in NATO. Jordan is armed to the teeth. Those are the neighbors of Syria. If they're not willing to act, if they don't believe it's in their national interest to act, why should the United States, 10,000 miles away, with no clear connection to a national interest, act? So I don't believe it's any of those moments, and therefore I'm hoping that the Congress turns the president down, and let's go on with various other things, like the 90 million people who've dropped out of the workforce.
All right. Well, let them sort it out themselves. Bill Martell, I want your thoughts on that, but we're going to a super short break. So after a break, let them sort it out themselves. Sarwar's comment. I want your thoughts, Bill. And Jeannie, also to Sarwar's point, which I wanted to ask you as well, why aren't other actors in the region getting involved instead of the United States so far away? Your thoughts on that question are coming up, and we'll take more of your calls. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, shifting priorities on Capitol Hill. Then, National Book Award-winning novelist Alice McDermott on her latest novel, Someone. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Spine Center at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, using research results to build customized treatment plans. Information at dhspine.org. And Company C, creating a lifestyle of colorful living with brightly colored area rugs, bedding, furniture, and home accents. Retail store in Concord and online at companyc.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy, and today in The Exchange, we're looking at what to do about Syria in light of the congressional votes coming up and President Obama going on national TV tomorrow to make the case for some sort of limited strike against the Syrian government for its reported use of chemical weapons against civilians. We've been looking at the arguments for and against, gauging reaction here in the Granite State, and let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Bill Martell, just before the break, Sarwar Kashmiri said, look, let the Syrians sort it out themselves. He does not see this as in America's national security interest. It's a question a lot of Americans are asking.
Yeah, I probably would respectfully differ a bit. I think it is a critical moment for American policy. I think it directly affects our vital national interests. And I think, as John asked the question about whether it's a Munich moment or a Kosovo kind of moment, I think it's closer to the former. And I say that because if we could take out of this debate the policy, the pressure we've been putting on Iran for several years, in which the president has said and others have said, you will not be permitted to have nuclear weapons, the dust-up we had in the spring with North Korea involving ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons, the potential for a conflagration in the Middle East if this thing spirals out of control, I think it all says that it's something that we have to engage in. Now, having said that, I'm not aware of anyone anywhere in the policy arena or scholarly arena or commentators who are proposing anything other than using military power, not people on the ground.
So no boots on the ground.
This is a no boot. I have never heard anyone use the words Syria, boots on the ground in the same paragraph in terms of advocacy. What we are talking about is using military power to make it clear to the to make it clear to the Syrians and to others that they can't use these kinds of weapons, and that when we make policy declarations, that they count. And I think that's why I think John's question about whether this is closer to Munich or not is a tough one. I'm perfectly happy to have the Syrians sort this thing out. I don't think Americans should be involved in doing that. But we cannot allow, after almost 100 years of an international consensus, that you're not allowed to use chemical weapons. We've made policy declarations like that. We've made the same with other weapons of mass destruction. For us to walk away or to do nothing, I think, sends signals that will have really serious, dangerous consequences.
And Gene, I want to hear from you, too. But just super quick, Bill, what about Sarwar's earlier point, though, that, you know, these regimes have killed a lot of people through other means, traditional guns or bombs or whatever. So is it hypocritical to say, you know, yeah, you can slaughter your people with guns, but you can't slaughter them with chemical weapons?
I'm uncomfortable with the term hypocritical, but I get the point. But I think there are red lines in the world. And having chemical weapons or biological weapons or nuclear weapons is just as it's from the Wizard of Oz. It's a horse of entirely different color. This is an absolutely different problem, and it's one that we have been deeply worried about for a very long time. And I think if you listen to the President and the Secretary of State, they've been saying, making exactly that point. We cannot allow a world in which others are using these kinds of weapons.
Jeannie, your point, or Sarwar's point, which others have asked, why are we getting involved? We're so far away. Sarwar does not feel it's in our national security interest. What about other actors in the region? Isn't this their dogfight?
Well, let me just before we answer the why aren't the other actors getting involved, we are involved. So the only question is, how do we go involved now? And I think Representative Custer basically said, the administration has been involved. One of the reason that this is being discussed now is because attempts at diplomacy have not been working and they have been stalled. And I am not advocating necessarily the strikes or the not strikes, but because I think it is a very complex issue. But I think the notion that the U.S. is not involved is a mistake. We are involved. We already supply the rebels, and we are heavily involved in humanitarian assistance. Why aren't the states getting involved is in the region is the same answer. They already are involved in many ways. So poor Jordan and Lebanon, tiny populations, weak states, and they have an incredibly large, a quarter of Lebanon's population now is Syrian refugees. A quarter. Jordan is not so far behind. It has 6 million people instead of 4, and it has, you know, 500,000 Syrian refugees. So 2 million people have fled that conflict, and the only place that they are going is the neighboring states, Iraq, Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon. All those states are grappling with an extraordinary humanitarian crisis, and the United States has been the most generous country in the world in supporting humanitarian assistance. Russia, by the way, has given almost the least of all the major world powers. So in terms of what we're doing, we are already there. We do have significant interests, and the notion that the Arabs somehow fight all the time and we're not involved. The U.S. has been involved since the end of World War II as the power in the Middle East and North Africa, just as Britain had been in the 19th century. So we are there. We are involved. Whether we stay involved militarily is a different kind of question, and that's where I think is incredibly productive debate going on here on the show and in the public, and I think it's all good.
All right, let's take another call. This is John in Amherst. Hi, John. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura. Good morning, Bill. I believe what we need to do is to degrade Assad's ability to launch rockets and to launch these kinds of chemical weapons. I believe this is in our national interest to weaken the regime, the regime's ability to prosecute and kill the rebels, as they call them. And I believe that will hasten the end of this conflict. It will bring Assad to the negotiating table, and ultimately, I would hope, create space for a UN, you know, peacekeeping force to come in. The fact that the opposition is multifaceted and includes elements that we would not like to see rise to supremacy.
Including Al-Qaeda-linked groups, John.
Exactly. So, we're not happy about that, but I think we can sort that out in the end game. And right now, I think it's important that Assad does not have the upper hand. So long as he does, I think he will remain in power for years to come, and ultimately, kill off any folks that are opposed to his regime.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call. Sarwar Kashmiri, what do you think? John making the case for the U.S. to get more deeply involved.
Well, I think this idea of degrading and limiting strikes and so on, it's a colorful idea. And the reason I don't believe in it is you cannot attack a sovereign country and not think of it as a declaration of war. I mean, you can't just by saying that we won't put boots on the ground then go in and attack a sovereign country. Right? That's against international law. It's against what the United Nations Security Council stands for. It's against all of the conventions that that we, the United States, and other countries have signed. So, no, I don't agree with that. And finally, what I wanted to also say is that this idea of the chemical convention, the red line, and so on, let me just remind your listeners that during the Iraq-Iran war of a few years ago, the United States not only didn't spank Iraq for using chemical weapons against Iran, the CIA was actually supplying satellite coordinates to make that war work. So this idea that all of a sudden we get up and say, my God, there's been a convention for 80 years, just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, thanks for that call, John. And here's an email that came in from Elaine, who says, has any type of financial sanctions, especially freezing up the assets of Assad and others in power, been discussed? I feel that bombing Syria will only hurt the civilians. The regime does obviously not care about the people of Syria. Elaine, thanks for that email. Bill Martell, what do you think? Other actions?
I've heard just a couple of glimmers about trying to impose economic sanctions against Syria as a way to make the regime pay the price. I'm skeptical of the ability for those to be successful, given the cases of Iran and North Korea and others. And when you have the great powers, Russia, China, among others, that are providing, as the expression goes, top cover or support for these regimes, it makes it very difficult to impose these kinds of sanctions. And in the case of Iran and Syria, Russia and China have opposed actions against these states. So I think I'm sympathetic to the cause. I've never believed, frankly, that, as we see with Iran on practically a daily basis, that these kinds of efforts do much more than signal and symbolize the unhappiness of the international community, the actions that these countries are taking, in this case, Syria.
Here's another. Sure, go ahead, Jeannie. Yeah.
Just that we have sanctions in place, financial sanctions. They were enacted. Actually, there's some that were enacted in the mid-2000s and then some later. They're not, as Bill was saying, they're not comprehensive because there's no point. There's no way to enforce them. But we do have targeted financial sanctions. They targeted Bashar al-Assad and leading members of the regime. So they're in place, but obviously they're not shaping the course of the conflict.
Right. Well, thanks for that email, Elaine. And here's another one that came in earlier. This is from Eric. He says, where did Syria get the sarin gas and delivery systems? Did they make it or receive them from another source? And if so, who makes it and profits from it? Eric, it's a great question. Bill, do you know?
That, Eric, is a remarkably good question. And I'm going to confess I don't know. But the number of states that produce this stuff, we can count on a hand. And you have to, and that's a remarkably good question. I'm struggling. What I want to say is we've had debates going back for a decade that this stuff might have leaked out in the early 2000s going out of Iraq and other places. That's a really good question, and it's one that has not been part of the policy dispute, and it's one that, frankly, ought to be. I am not aware, I could be wrong, I am not aware of Syria having indigenous chemical weapon productions. If Sarwar or Jeannie know that, please jump in. I'm not aware, I have not heard that, if that's the case.
Well,
now,
so
I would say one more point. In 2007, 6 years ago, just about now, Israel conducted airstrikes against a nuclear reactor in Syria, and later press reports suggest that they had picked up that they had signatures of materials that we would associate with trying to build the nuclear weapon.
So a hint that
go ahead.
Yeah. So I know everybody wants to jump in. Sarwar, go ahead.
So the New York Times, I believe it was yesterday, pointed out that Syria collected all of these munitions from a number of countries, East European, others, including material that was supplied by American companies. So they've been doing it under the eyes of the entire world, and no one's really done anything. So that's, I guess, part of the answer.
But no indigenous production. They're not doing their own production.
Jeannie, go ahead. Jump in there, and then I have a couple very last-minute questions for all of you about the domestic implications of this, what Obama is going to say, what Congress is going to do. But go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, I just wanted to add, because of Sarwar, I think, raised the really important point that chemical weapons have been used in the region and in very tragically during the 1980s in Iran by the Iraqis under Saddam Hussein with the full knowledge and even assistance of the U.S. But as opposed to just that being hypocritical, I would also say that it also opens, again, if we think about this as a domestic war and a regional war, one of my concerns about thinking about the consequences of either action or inaction is how does it affect U.S. relations with Iran? Because Iran actually is leery of the use of chemical weapons precisely because they've suffered from it. And so in some ways it opens the door towards a sort of trying to again talk, as the Obama administration has been trying, but with this newly elected Iranian president who did run on trying to basically restore relationships with the United States and to make progress on the nuclear issue. So one of the pieces that I'm sure the administration is sort of turning around is how does military action affect the calculation of U.S. relations with Iran?
And I'm sure there are a lot of opinions, even within the White House, on this. You know, what you raise is an interesting point, Jeannie, and I just want to make sure I got it right. So you're saying the U.S. didn't mind the use of chemical weapons when Iraq was using them against Iran a couple decades back. Now we say, nah, nobody can do that.
Well, I'm not. I mean, I think that all great powers have inconsistent foreign policies in the pursuit of their interests. I don't think we're exceptional. But what I'm actually saying is that Iran is sensitive to the use of chemical weapons, and it's a one small little opening for the U.S. to try to find some sort of way to talk to Iran that's not hitting them over the head about the development of a nuclear weapon, but actually saying, look, we're all concerned about chemical weapons. Can we make progress on these sets of issues, you know, as a maybe a separate track or a simultaneous track to airstrikes? My concern about airstrikes is that forecloses those kinds of conversations, but, it, you know, that may not be the case.
Okay, so here's my last big question. Sorry, let me jump in, okay, because we've got like 2 minutes left.
Go ahead.
I apologize. There's so much to talk about here. But this is for you, Sarwar. So what do you think President Obama should do if Congress says no, which is a possibility at this point?
I think he should say thank you very much, wise choice, and get on with what he has to do.
And how does that make him look in terms of this credibility issue that people have talked about, Sarah?
I don't think it makes him any less credible than he was 2 years ago. I think this whole credibility thing has been totally blown up. I don't think he'll be any less credible. Leaders, as Jeannie just alluded to, you know, do things, go around, do something else again. The fact of the matter is that the United States is the most powerful country on earth. Add together everyone's defense budgets, we're the largest. The president can act by himself in American interest. There, nothing will change. The only thing that will change is that we won't get ourselves into another mess and drag the Middle East and the rest of the world with it.
And to you, Jeannie, some commentators on the right and left, not just Republicans, some Democrats have said this too, that Mr. Obama has not done a good job explaining what he wants to do, why it's really in our interest to do so. As a Middle East expert, what do you think?
I think that we have a tension here between what we say in public and what we say in private. And there's an awful lot of statecraft and diplomacy that simply is done in private. And I think what Representative Custer alluded to is that they are farther along in their discussions than the rest of us because they have been having them. And this goes again to how much can you get done in kind of the open eye of the public. So I think there's a tension there. I think the thing that I would want to say is we have a regime that has already committed crimes against humanity. So we have a problem, whether or not we deal with it through airstrikes or whether or not we sort of convene, you know, our international convention with Russia, which we've been trying and trying to do. There is a real problem here, and it is not going to go away. So this has to be kind of a more ongoing focus, not just this particular congressional vote, which I think is a hugely important one.
And real quick, Jeannie, so what if Congress says no?
I don't know what he will do. I think I really don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one to say, I want to hear from Congress, and then Congress says, no, you can't. And we don't know what's going to happen, Bill. What do you think Congress might do?
I think the Senate will say yes.
That's what I think.
I think the House will say yes narrowly. if the House and the Senate say yes, then the president absolutely should use military force. However, if the Senate says yes and the House says no, I still think the president should use military force. And to be completely contrary, if the Senate, which it will not, and the House were to say no, which I don't think will happen, I still think the president should use military force given the policy declarations that he has made and his people have made for several years regarding both other issues as well as Syria. I think the die is cast, and I would differ with Sarah respectfully. I really think that if the president made those declarations and changes his mind, it then raises questions in the minds of the Middle East, of Europe, of Asia, of close allies and friends, all of whom say, does the American word count?
Wow.
And
well,
that is some we don't want to have to explore the consequences of that policy shift.
All right. Well, obviously, NHPR, NPR will be covering this very closely. Bill Martell, thank you for being here. We really appreciate
it. Always a pleasure, Laura.
Bill Martell, Associate Professor of International Security at Tufts University's Fletcher School. His most recent book is called Victory in War. Sarwar Kashmiri, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
You run the best show in the business.
Thanks, Sarwar. Sarwar Kashmiri, adjunct professor at Norwich University, fellow at the Foreign Policy Association. He's the author of both NATO 2.0 and America and Europe After 9/11. And Jeannie Sowers, last but not least, thank you very much also for your time.
Thank you, Laura. It's always a pleasure.
Jeannie Sowers, associate professor of political science at UNH, the author of Environmental Politics in Egypt, and co-editor of Journey to Tahrir. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Northern Pass heads south. The campaign to promote this Canadian hydropower project has kicked into a new gear as officials make their case below the North Country, where residents largely oppose it. And concerns about towers and landscapes heard up north are being echoed elsewhere in New Hampshire, but so are arguments that the state needs this source of renewable energy. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 on NHPR, where we get support from UR members and from Bernstein Shore, a multi-service law firm providing practical advice in the area of litigation for businesses of all sizes in Manchester and at bernsteinshore.com. And from LRG Healthcare, presenting an information session on Makoplasty joint replacement for hips and knees on September 11th at Franklin Regional Hospital. More at lrgh.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Congress comes back to work today, but not to the challenges members expected to be facing after their summer recess. President Obama's surprise decision to ask Congress to authorize strikes in Syria has suddenly changed the discussion. Domestic issues have been eclipsed, at least for the moment, but there is still a